Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There probably was a time when it may have been easier for reporters to do the basic job of journalism, which is tell both sides of the story. Every story has two sides, or at least everyone believes they have their side of the story. And the journalist, while telling one story, needs to cover both sides. Why is that so difficult to do now? Why is it, in some cases with some subjects, almost impossible, even for reporters at as prestigious a journalistic outlet as the New York Times? Joining us to talk about a New York Times story on Pope Francis and LGBT activists, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to talk to you again.
Was there a time when journalists didn't have a hard time representing both sides of an issue in their writing?
Well, I think the honest answer to that is that there's never been a time when they struggled. What's changed is the degree to which they struggle. Let me give you an example. I can think of all kinds of stories in my career as a journalist to where one side of the story did not want to talk to me. And quite frankly, there are a lot of religious groups, including, let's be honest, a lot of conservative religious groups, that are convinced that if you don't talk to the press, the story will somehow just magically go away. And people used to have, maybe they had more of an option of doing that, but once the religious right came on the scene, and once a lot of religious subjects got fused with politics, the simple fact of the matter is that journalists are going to run that story no matter what, whether you talk to them or not. So on one level, I have experienced lots of stories in my life to where I would call people and call people and call people, and they would refuse to comment because they, I mean, to me, the classic example in my life was covering Jim and Tammy Baker during the televangelism scandals back in the 80s, the Pearly Gate story, as everyone called it. And the whole idea was they had their own television show. And so you would call them and ask for comment on something, call them, ask for their point of view, call them and say, we've looked up the following information. Would you please give us your response so that we can know if there's some other explanation for XYZ? They would refuse to do so. Then we would run the story and say that we attempted to contact them. Then they'd get on TV and say, gosh, did you know the Charlotte Observer just said all these terrible things about us? And we never even had a chance to respond. They're all wrong. So that's a game that a lot of people have played with the press for years. But at the heart of what you're asking is, did journalists try hard to get the views of other people? Even if those people didn't want to talk, did journalists try real hard? And then, if the people never would talk to you, it was very important to put in the story, repeated efforts by this newspaper to reach so-and-so were unsuccessful. A spokesperson for this organization said they would have no comment at this time. In other words, you signaled to the reader, hey, folks, we tried really hard to get this side of the story, to get their point of view, and they refused to cooperate. Now, once again, those are kind of the old days. That's not what we're seeing anymore, at least not in a lot of our elite publications.
Do you have an example for us?
Well, the new post that's up at Get Religion is a classic example, and a lot of that fits into, under the label that you and I have talked about, Kellerism, the reference to the former editor of the New York Times, Bill Keller, who made a remark a year or two ago in which he just simply said that the New York Times no longer feels the need to try to do coverage of both sides in certain types of stories, mostly those related to religion and culture, such as debates about sexuality issues. So, yeah, I mean, we've got another one of those cases right now involving the Roman Catholic Church, and the New York Times has done a story about Pope Francis and about some attempts by some gay, lesbian, bisexual, and trans people to get a meeting with Pope Francis when he's in the United States. And this entire story does not include a single quote from traditional pro-catechism Roman Catholics. It has lots of quotes from Catholic dissidents, but it doesn't have anyone representing the traditional, what I call the pro-catechism side of the story. Now, what I observed in this post today at Get Religion is that I kept waiting for some evidence that the New York Times tried to talk to conservative Catholics and conservative Catholics refused. But there are no references of that kind anywhere in the story. And it kind of left me yearning for the good old days when there were ways to find out if the newspaper even tried to get the other perspective.
So what does that produce in the paper of record?
Well, to some degree, it gets you a journalism product that's constructed almost in the exact same way that you would read coverage in political opinion magazines. In other words, it ends up being structured the way you would see an article in the New Republic on the left or the National Review on the right or the Weekly Standard on the right or maybe the Nation on the left or Rolling Stone or something like that. You get a story in which it's very apparent that the goal of the article was to give the viewpoint of a particular activist group, the details of its complaint, its view of the facts in the story, and you're never going to get to hear the other side debate whether those facts are accurate or whether certain statements are being accurately interpreted. And when you're dealing with stuff that's being said by the Pope, and when you're dealing with the doctrines of the Catholic Church, folks, these things are complicated. I mean, and people have very different opinions on some of them. So when a transsexual man who is a Catholic, or a transsexual person who's a Catholic, says, "I am a practicing Catholic," that immediately raises some questions about if that's true, what's their parish, what's the name of their priest, or if they quote an archbishop as having said or done something, and yet there's no attempt whatsoever to even name the archbishop, let alone to call the archbishop's office and get a perspective on whether or not this person is accurately recounting something. What kind of journalism is that? It's an advocacy journalism. It's kind of an op-ed, editorial page style of journalism, only in this case it's running in the news pages of the most powerful newspaper in the world. And this represents a fundamental change in the landscape of American journalism, as well as, of course, journalism about religion.
Could some of it be the result of the reporter's simple ignorance of who really speaks for the Roman Catholic Church? In other words, they might think, well, you know, the archbishop is just an archbishop. Any Catholic, it's kind of like evangelicalism. Anyone has an opinion on it, and they're all equally weighty.
Well, frankly, no, because in this case, we're dealing with the New York Times, and the New York Times is in a position to hire the very best religion writers on planet Earth. I mean, could you imagine if you posted a job for a religion writer at the New York Times, what kind of people would apply? I mean, in terms of their experience and their qualifications. So no, these are people that understand the Catholic Church. The impression that you're left with is that these are people who simply disagree with the Roman Catholic Church. What I argued in I must admit what was a slightly snarky way of stating it, in the piece today, I suggested that if you're not going to run that old sentence, which is something like, you know, what I said earlier, after repeated attempts to reach so-and-so, you know, we were unsuccessful. They declined to have, you know, any commentary at that time. What I suggested, you know, today is maybe it's time for them to insert into hard news stories of this kind the following sentence. It is the policy of the Times not to offer Catholic leaders and experts a chance to defend the teachings of their church, since those teachings clash with the views of this newspaper and thus are wrong. You know, I think if you inserted that sentence in the middle of a news story, that would change the tenor of it a little bit in terms of how many people would read it. You're left with the impression when you get through with this is that the Roman Catholic Church has absolutely nothing whatsoever to say in its own defense, you know, on any of these charges or on the accuracy of any of these events. It's really a very strange and fascinating case.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. When we come back, he says there is a story hidden in the New York Times story about the Pope and LGBT activists. We'll find out what it is right after this.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We are what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the New York Times story on Pope Francis and LGBT activists. Senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, one thing you did find in this New York Times story is, as you say, a hidden story. What is it?
Well, and that is, see, the problem is not that there are no Catholics represented in this story. I get the impression, especially when you read long paragraphs of material in which there's no clear attribution, but the material clearly came from somewhere, that there are Catholics whose views have been soaked into the lines of the story, in between the lines and the spaces. In some degree, this copy has been baptized in the views of certain Catholics, even if they're not quoted by names. But the problem is that these are Catholics who disagree with the actual on the record catechism teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. So in many cases, they don't want to be quoted by name because that would put them on the record and they would get in trouble. So there are all kinds of people whose views are kind of soaked in here, but their names aren't used either. So you read sections of the story and you go, pardon me, who's talking here? Whose views am I reading? I mean, other than some of the pro-gay rights Catholics who are on the record, who are part of organizations that are not linked to the Catholic Church or not a part of it at all. Go back to your earlier question for a second. One of the reasons that journalists spend so much time covering the Catholic Church, besides the fact that it's huge, it's global, it's the largest Christian faith in the world, which, you know, and it's very politically astute and powerful, and it often frames some of its public statements in political terms, which make them very friendly to reporters from the reporter's perspective. Politics is the only thing that's real, of course. But that it's also easy to know who the Catholic leaders are. The Catholic leaders have a very clearly structured hierarchy. And you can go to a website, and here's the names. And here's the Department of Pro-Life Activities, and here's the Department of Family Life, and here's the Department of Marriage Preparation. Whereas in large parts of the United States, when it comes time to cover, say, the Assemblies of God or independent Baptist churches or giant evangelical megachurches that have no denomination at all, you get ready to figure out who the experts are. You can't just look them up on a website. You can't look them up in the phone book. They don't have titles that tell you who they are. Like if I was going to say to you, name to me the three leading evangelical experts in America on family law, how much would you have to know before you placed those phone calls? You'd have to know what seminaries even touch this, what colleges even touch this. You'd have to know that within the Southern Baptist Convention, there are two or three branches like the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission and things like that. You'd have to know the structures of that church well enough to be able to chase all these people down. And even then, you might miss them because it might turn out that there's a pastor somewhere on the West Coast, say, leading a huge church that just happens to be one of the most outspoken voices in America on this, all the way to the point that he's, you know, hobnobs with presidents and has been asked to say prayers at inauguration services or something. You'd have to know who these people are. Whereas in the Catholic Church, you can go to a website, you can click something, and there's often a press office there. And it's really quite easy to cover the Catholic Church at the simple level of who's who. It's more complex to find out who the people are behind the scenes. But there's no excuse to not have basic questions about Catholic doctrine and Catholic liturgical practice or communion practice or Catholic law. There's just no excuse to not know who the conservative schools are and who the liberal schools are if you're going to be a professional religion writer in this country.
You also note that in the Times piece, there's a small indication that maybe the Times editors are beginning to wonder whether or not Pope Francis is, as you say, their man. What do you mean by that, and what's the indication?
Well, this is we're dealing here with a very experienced religion writer, and as you know, Get Religion, we talk more about what editors do than what individual reporters do, but we are dealing with an experienced religion reporter. And what I noted, for example, the famous quote that you and I have discussed on a number of occasions, the famous quote from Pope Francis, in which he said what? I'm going to test you briefly.
Who am I to judge?
Who am I to judge? Well, what was the context of that famous quote? Well, for the first time, and maybe this has run in a major publication before, but there's a phrase I'll read from the New York Times story. In his first year, he shocked the world with his comment, "Who am I to judge?" uttered in response to a question during an airborne news conference about his attitude toward a celibate gay priest serving in the Vatican. Now, this is not a particular priest. It's more of a theoretical priest. But what's the key word in that phrase? His attitude toward?
Celibate.
A celibate gay priest. In other words, a priest who's not violating his vows. And in that dialogue, the Pope said, who am I to judge? He said, if this man is truly seeking God, and the implication here, if he's repentant, he's going to his spiritual father, he's living his life in keeping with the teachings of the church, who am I to judge? Now, instead of who am I to judge, who is the Pope saying will ultimately judge?
Well,
God.
Obvious, yes.
God. Or, at the very least, God and this man's spiritual father to whom he's confessing his sins. You know, in the Catholic tradition of absolution, of repentance and absolution. Now, if the Pope was this man's spiritual father, which, of course, the Pope probably wouldn't discuss, as it would all be confidential, he might say something more direct. But otherwise, he's saying it's God will judge in this case. But he's discussing a priest whose life has not been described as being in violation of the Catholic Church's teachings. So who am I to judge? Well, it goes on to mention some other statements the Pope has made, including a statement in the Philippines not that long ago in which he said the family is being threatened by growing efforts to redefine the very institution of marriage. He's criticized Western countries for trying to recolonize parts of the third world. And on one memorable occasion, he was quoted as saying that gender theory is a great modern danger to humanity, not unlike nuclear weapons, which is not a comparison that's going to get you a lot of friends in major newsrooms in America. I just hopefully dryly stated that I think that they are being shocked to find out that when you investigate the broad sweep of what Pope Francis has to say, his views on marriage and family are actually Catholic. Now, I recognize that there are very real debates within Catholicism right now about, in particular, the issue of whether they might join the churches of the East, the Orthodox churches of the East, and allow people to go to communion if they're divorced, after a period of penance, after a period of repentance, penance, and withdrawing from communion, and then maybe, depending on what their spiritual father decides, after a couple of years, they may return to the chalice just to receive communion. Now, that's a lively debate. It's going to be a hot-button issue at the upcoming meetings of the family in Philadelphia. But, like I said, there are serious issues about that. But the Pope, at this point, is not waving any flags about redefining marriage or some of the things that the culture wants. And I think, frankly, a lot of liberal journalists are disappointed in him. And this kind of is the New York Times saying to Pope Francis, I don't know if you're listening, but we're sort of disappointed in you, guy.
Finally, then, coming back to kind of the main thrust here, that if the New York Times were honest in its reporting, they would insert that paragraph you suggested earlier, saying, look, we just don't feel the need to allow Catechism Catholics to defend the teachings of their church because they're in contrast or clash with the beliefs of this newspaper. They're obviously wrong. That is obviously tongue-in-cheek. What should the New York Times do to improve its just as basic reporting on these issues?
Well, at the very least, they could call the other side and give them a chance. Now, it could be at this stage that there are traditional Catholics who would refuse to speak to the Roman Catholic Church. I do not doubt that. But at that point, we'd be back to where the press used to be, and the Times could say repeated efforts to one of the anecdotes is set in Detroit, repeated efforts to discuss this issue with the Archbishop of Detroit were unsuccessful. Or after a week of contacts, the Times was not able to obtain material from the Archbishop of Detroit offering his point of view on the issues in this story. They could go back to signaling to the reader, hey, we tried. We tried to give these people a chance to talk, and they declined to talk to us. That's one thing. The other option they could do is they could just simply say, we're no longer going to do straight news coverage on this. We're going to only do coverage that would be considered analysis or commentary. And they could simply mark all of these stories analysis and signal to the reader, the following is not an ordinary news story. This story has been shaped by the beliefs of this newspaper, and this is our analysis of the facts. Read them and take that into consideration.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column at the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to talk to you.
In hour two of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, July the 31st, we're going to conclude our four-part series on the book of Ephesians, Ephesians chapters 5 and 6 with Dr. Thomas Winger. We'll talk about what he calls songs of the Spirit, the fear of Christ as a woman is to fear her husband, and slaves and masters as redeeming the time. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When the Apostle Paul stated, I have become all things to all men, was he talking about fitting in with the world? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, All Things to All Men. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor David Wan's story of failing to find Lutheran theology in several Lutheran churches, but finding it in Scripture and the Lutheran Confessions, the free online Issues Etc. journal.